We're going to be talking about feeding the 5,000. You guys know that one. If you've been in around church much at all, you've heard something about this or probably heard the story. It's a fun story, but it's, again, these are stories that John highlights as seven primary signs. There were events that really pointed, had great power in just the story itself. And then also it pointed to something that is very significant as well. And so we're going to be talking a lot about food today. So, I encourage you, to be thinking about hunger today. Understanding, you need to understand you are a spiritual being that lasts for eternity, and you happen to have an earth suit that's about 80 years if you're lucky. I guess it just went up. They went up to 85, national average, which sounds kind of depressing to me because I want a healthy life. But anyway, but 85, right? So, or whatever you got. And that's you have the temporal side of you, the physical side, which is very important, and we have the spiritual side of us. And we have to understand that we need food to take care of our physical side. We need substance, we need provision, and we also need spiritual food. Now, most of us are pretty good about knowing when you're hungry. I found that's fairly easy physically. When you're physically hungry, you just know that. You find yourself, why am I in front of the refrigerator? Something brought me here. I don't know what this is, but it's this thing called hunger, right? If you guys think about the time when you were so hungry, a time that you, like, were really hungry. Can you think of that? I mean, I remember we used to ski in Colorado, and we had no money. So we had one meal a day at the evening at a restaurant, but we brought snacks, and we did basically trail mix all day during the skiing because we didn't want to stop because we didn't want to lose any time. So we just few peanuts during the day, yogurt in the morning, whatever. And then we get to night, and I'm telling you what, I was hungry. And I remember just thinking, I got to get to the restaurant. How long is this going to take? If I order this, it will be faster than this. And now it's just like, and everything, they could have brought me dog food. I'm like, this is delicious. You know, it just was amazing, right? And that feeling of you're hungry, and you can tell your body is craving, you have to give me fuel, right? And you take it in, right? And you feel the life of that, right? And Debbie and I, when we travel, we on vacations, will often kind of pay attention to time at all. That's kind of the fun part of it, right? And so the problem with that is we have no schedule. So we're in the middle of nowhere driving to some town, and all of a sudden we notice that, I just noticed Debbie is not as nice as she used to be. And then she is, I'm not as nice as I used to be. And pretty soon I can drive fine, and we start going and like, oh, ha. It was 2:30 in the afternoon. We had a granola bar in the morning. We have no lunch. And we've learned all we do now, we don't discuss it. We just close our mouth. Very good, the spiritual discipline. Close your mouth and find the nearest restaurant, regardless of what it costs, regardless of whatever's quickest. So this one time, we couldn't find one. We were driving down these roads and turning back there, and we come across this really bad, ugly, scary restaurant. And we went in and we ate. It was an experience. See, there's this thing about food that we kind of know when we're hungry. We know we get it, and it drives us to a source to fill that, right? Now you have to understand is, if you haven't eaten, you know you're hungry. But our biggest need is spiritual. You have to understand that. That is the biggest need, and many times we don't know we're hungry. We feel the symptoms. And we're grumpy, and we have these things happening in our life, and we keep thinking, well, it just must be something natural that we need to do to fill that. What we're going to be talking today is we're going to talk about this bread. And bread has a lot of symbolic meanings. I mean, it's really the place of provision. And we have to understand that we need spiritual bread just like we need physical bread. And the question is, how do you get that in you? Where do you get that, right? You know where to go to for the physical food, the provision. But bread represents actually much bigger than just physical bread. It's really about provision, right, isn't it? I mean, it's the spot of, it's what supplies the needs you have. When give us this day our daily bread, it's not saying I'm going to have just bread. It's no, I provide what I need physically to do well, right? And even today, we now don't think of it that way, but it's interchangeable with, a meal. Like, we break bread. We're eating a meal, right? But we break bread. We use it as a terminology of this kind of understanding that it's provision. I mean, even in America, you know, we say, hey, buddy, if you're a hippie, give me some bread, right? It's that term, or you're working, you're getting a little dough, right? How about this one? You're a breadwinner. What's that about in our day? Well, we're still connected to this bread thing that we actually, you are providing for the needs physically for your family. You're the breadwinner, right? So this terminology of bread, you have to understand, when it says bread in the Bible, Jesus is always showing us this understanding of how we take this natural thing of how hunger is. We say, now you need to understand the spiritual side of it. And this is really the alert for where we're going with it. We're going to go through the story of the 5,000 and kind of break it down into how it looks and pull away a few truths on it, but we're going to land on this thing of how do we find spiritual bread? How do we find provision spiritually? How do we take that in? All right? And so, start with it. We're going to start in this place. We're going to call this the bread of life, and we're going to start in John 6. Now, this story of the 5,000 is actually in every gospel, and so you can put a lot together when you read all the different ones, so I'll try to help us to understand the whole thing from the different perspectives and then also focus on what John is saying as well. And so as we look at this, is that this is probably, I don't know, maybe Jesus' second year in his ministry. It's different now. Where he goes now, there's a crowd. Everybody knows him. He's healed enough people, set enough people free, had enough miraculous signs that he's a known person, that when people around, the crowds come. And it's interesting in context for this particular moment to kind of be a little bit of a history is things are changing quite a bit with the disciples too. Remember how I talked about last week when Jesus came and what we're seeing, who Jesus is? We said, if you see who Jesus is, you see who God is. He's showing his equal with God. And if we see Jesus, we see the Father. So we understand that when Jesus is on earth, he's there so we can say, who is this God? And we can see how Jesus interacts with love and power. We say, oh, that's who God is, right? We see who he is. But there's another thing he's doing. The reason he has taken on human form is he's saying, by the way, I'm not grasping my divinity. I'm doing it imperfectly, but as a human. So you can learn how to do this as well, because guess what? They didn't know this, but they're going to become the body of Christ. They're going to become Jesus. And so on this world, the church, right? So what he's doing now, he's actually teaching them to kind of, you know, in this spot where they start recognizing that he begins teaching them how to do this. And so this is real, right before this, he sent out the 12 and didn't give them anything to take with them to minister just like he did, to teach, and then they would heal the sick, and they cast out demons. He'd give them that authority. And so they came back like wired up, like, whoa, you know, it really works. And so as the word's going around that this is happening to the disciples, and right about that same time, John the Baptist, who they were all close to, probably some of them may have been baptized by John the Baptist, we don't know, was in prison. Herod had him in prison, but he executed him. He beheaded him. So if you can imagine that, someone that close to you, love that deeply, all of a sudden is killed, and now the word comes out, and the word gets to Jesus, and they're hurting, right? And I say that because when we're moving on this scene, if you look at all the other accounts, it's very clear that they're not going there to minister. They're going there to get away. They're finding a quiet place where no one's around. And so what starts happening, though, the interesting thing about it is it didn't really work that way. In fact, if you look at all the accounts, what really happened was they spotted them, citing Jesus' disciples' power, let's go, and they look at it, they heals people, and all of a sudden they're watching his boat head a certain direction, so they start running. And they're running, which is a long ways, if you look at the map, They're running village after village. It's getting bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden, by the time they get around to pulling into this quiet, deserted place, it's not quite deserted. There's tons of people waiting, with great need. And as he looks at that, it says that in one of the accounts it says, but many saw him leave and recognized him and ran by foot from town to town ahead of them. And Jesus landed and saw the large crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began teaching, and one account says, and he began healing their sick. So this is the environment now. He goes, okay, he sees these people And he has compassion, and he begins healing their sick and teaching them. Now, so in that context, the way John puts it is, sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee. A great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed and by healing the sick. And Jesus went up to the mountainside and sat down with the disciples. The Jewish Passover was near. And so what this really would be, after this healing, there's a spot where the crowd keeps growing and they just get a little higher up on the mountain. And at this point, they're basically recognizing what's going on, and what starts taking place is he goes, when Jesus looked up and saw the great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, by the way, Philip he was the town that was closest was his hometown, so it's like, hey, you know the area, we're out in the sticks here, but where shall we buy bread for all these people to eat? There's a slight grin on Jesus' face, I think, and he asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. And Philip answered him, it would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite. Okay? So, what's happening here? Right? What's happening here is Jesus is doing training. Right? In Matthew, the understanding was this issue of food came up from them thinking, wait a second, these guys have just run a marathon to get here. They're poor anyway. They don't have much food. And now we've gone all day long, and they're going to drop on the way home. Jesus, you need to send them away. That's the context of what this is. And so what Jesus says in Matthew was, and this is a really, if you imagine being the disciples when he says this, he says, oh, don't send them away. You feed them. Like, thank you for that helpful answer. what's happening here? This is a training. It's a next step after the 12 going out. It's like, what's he doing? Just like he did with the 12, take away all ways that you can possibly fill in the gaps. You have to depend on God or it's not going to happen. And it's the same thing's happening here. What do you think? How are we going to fill these people? You want to go buy some food? You know? You want to send them away? No, stay, keep them here. You feed them. And he's putting in this position. Now, another of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. Here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many? Somewhat of an understatement. But it's like, this is again showing we're stuck. Well, there's no natural solution to this. And so in that spot, we have to understand. Now, most theologians would say, because this is only accounting the men, that probably the crowd was probably 10 to 15,000, okay, with women and children. So you have 10, 15, let's just go low. Let's go 10,000. And you guys been to Chaffetz Arena, it holds 10,000. So it's like, think about the most crowded time you've ever been there at a concert or whatever, you look around. If you look at the crowd, this is a picture of a 10,000 person crowd. Right? So, just put yourself into the story. Okay? You're looking at this crowd, and then you're looking at this. Right? All right. And that's probably exaggerated. The fish are probably not going to be that big. They're pickled and they're smoked, and it's just this thing. So that's what they're working with. And so as we look at this, is really, Jesus said, and this is really interesting, Jesus said, have the people sit down. All right? There's plenty of grass in the place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed those who were seated as much as they, and to those who were seated as much as they wanted. And he did the same thing with the fish. Now, there's a lot left out there. Like, how did that happen? We have to use our imagination and best we can understand. And I think my imagination is most accurate, so I'll use that one. All right? But in my mind, what I think is really interesting here, what's to me really clear in the text is that this is like you feed them. This is a, you're going to, we're going to come to this, let's look at the problem here. It is very clear he's putting it back on the disciples, and now he's saying something like this. Can you imagine me, the disciples? Okay, we're talking about this group of people, so that means each disciple has 16 groups of 50. 16 groups of 50. And they have to create these, okay, let's sit down here. They're saying, exactly, why are we sitting down? May feed you, I don't know, but just sit down. Jesus said to sit down. Go to sit down. It's like, get ready for something, you know? So they're like, okay, let's see what's next here. And as they're doing that, we don't know how this fish and the loaves multiplied, but they did. I'm guessing there was some as Jesus did it, because it'd be hard to have just, you know, a 12th of all this stuff spread around, right? But at the same time, I'd also say, I don't think it was just at the Jesus end, because they're having to get a lot of crowd. That's a lot of things. So my thinking is, they had some, what other wacky baskets they gathered around, and they had these big baskets, and they had these, and they would reach, and Jesus, it started multiplying probably. I don't know. Who knows? But here's what I think. I think it multiplied as he were giving it away, which I think holds up with lots of how God does things. We give it away, we trust, we give it away. Whatever we give away grows. It's just a principle of the kingdom. So in my mind, what's happening is these disciples are actually walking up to a crowd of 50 and hoping this is going to work, right? They can spiritualize all they want. They're thinking, oh God, oh God, oh God, help me. And so they're all waiting, and all of a sudden, that first person's, the first and second and third person are killer. Like, you're going to run out, you know? And all of a sudden, it doesn't run out, all right? And then by the time you get to 50, you're like, yes! You know, this is good, because then you're very confident, right? Then you keep going for the other people. But you understand, they were actually part of this thing, imagining how that would be, right? So this is an amazing, powerful thing that takes place. And when they had all had enough to eat, he said to the disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. This is good for your kids. Let nothing be wasted. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over that had not been eaten. Again, pretty clear there. Not just enough, but more than enough. And a clear statement, right? Again, spiritual food, natural food. This is speaking of the kingdom in the way he's doing this. And then they had this response, which apparently looks pretty good to me, but it didn't to Jesus. After the people saw the signs Jesus performed, they began to say, surely this is a prophet who has come into the world. Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again into the mountain by himself. He finally got his solitude by running away, shoving the disciples out in the boat, going up the hill. But the thing is, they wanted to be king, and Jesus wouldn't allow that to happen. And this is key, which will come back. And really, John is, you really need, I'd encourage you to read all the whole chapter. It's really 70 verses we're trying to compact into here. But as I look at this, I think there's some takeaways that I think are important. And we're going to land on the primary takeaway of how do we have spiritual food, but I don't want, there's just too much good stuff in here to not at least mention it, is that, first off, when Jesus is doing these miracles, understand there's another level he's doing. He's communicating. He is blessing the people, but he's also communicating about his kingdom. He's communicating about who God is, and the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And then he also communicates, this is what God does. So we look at those things, and in the middle of it also talks, it reflects on how he sees us, who we are, and it shows us what we're made for. This is, in almost all of Jesus' miracles, you can begin seeing how we relate to it and how that comes into it. So I just want to cover a couple things, and then we're going to get into this whole thing of spiritual bread. I mean, I think the obvious takeaways that show up pretty quickly is God is compassionate. I mean, he comes in, what motivates this whole thing was he looked at the people and said, oh, they're like sheep without a shepherd, and he just began giving them spiritual things, teaching and bringing healing and physical and spiritual both, right? Both physical and spiritual. God is loving, and you see his love. He's tired, he's grieving, and he still loves these people. He's powerful and generous. He provides for us, and it's not just slightly, it's above and beyond what we need. These are all truths that are coming out of this story that we know about God. But I think one of the truths that we see in this is the disciples, again, are starting to learn. He's putting them in possession of saying, I want to come through you, right? And he puts in this position where they're the people who get to go around and distribute the things that God has done. And they partner with him. And by just doing what he says, these things start happening to their amazement. And his power flows through them, and they're starting to catch on to that. So those are all truths I think we can take away. But the thing that this story is pointing to is the whole thing about spiritual bread and physical bread. And it's not emphasizing the physical bread. It's showing us this whole thing of spiritual bread, right? It's pointing to a statement that Jesus makes, and he says in this long discussion as people begin approaching him that he is the bread of life. Now, what happens after this is all done, disciples, we'll talk about the walk in the water, all that, how Jesus got in the boat, but the reality of it is he's up in solitude, reconnecting with you. The disciples are out in the boat, and they're going to Capernaum over the sea. So they are watching the next morning. They can't figure out the boat's gone, the disciples are gone, Jesus is not around anymore. I'm not sure that's that. Well, we're going to go find Jesus. We're going to go where that boat goes. And they actually get in a boat and sail over to try to find Jesus again. And they're still on the same thing. They still want to make him king. They still want to submit themselves to him and make him. So what's wrong with that, right? They've sought him. They've gone through all this effort, and the first thing they say is, how in the world did you get here? Is the first thing, because they didn't understand how that took place. Rabbi, how did you get here? But he answers not that question. He answers the deeper question that they don't even know they're needing to hear. He says, Jesus answered, very truly I tell you, again, when you see that, it's coming, the clear statement, the radical statement's coming. Pay attention. You are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man may give you. For on him, God the Father, has placed his seal of approval. Then they ask him, what must we do to do the works God requires? Now, this is a really important question. So what he's saying here is saying, you're working really hard because, in fact, you got up early and you sailed across the sea to get a hold of me, and the reason that you want to be submitted to me is because I give you bread physically. You're killing yourself, and you're working your tail off for something that's going to perish, you know? And he goes on to say, no, you need spiritual bread. And as he talks about this, they ask this question, okay, I know what it means for me to have physical hunger and say I desire to have more food and come over here. I understand how that works. But what is the work you're talking about that's for spiritual bread that doesn't perish? Right? And this is his answer, which is very important. Jesus answered, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. Right? Now, this starts this very long conversation. I'm going to try to summarize it somewhat because it goes back and forth a lot of different ways. And so there, and he goes on, when they try to get this, they said, for the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And they're, in their mind, they're still thinking, how does that work? The bread, some spiritual thing. And he's talking about himself, but they can't grasp this. Sir, they said, All you give is this bread. Whatever that means, it sounds good. Let's do that. And then Jesus declares, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. We hear that a lot. You have to understand, the impact of the statement was radically crazy when he says, I don't come to bring you even spiritual things or spiritual bread. I actually am the bread. And it's like, well, you must not understand what I'm talking about. So there's this long dialogue, right? And by the end of the dialogue, these people who wanted to make him their king deserted him because they couldn't take this truth. Now, what we have to understand is Jesus is not just someone who gives us the gifts of God. He is God. And spiritual food comes not from him giving us spiritual food. He actually is the spiritual food. Now, if you say, well, that's hard to wrap your mind around, you're right. It was hard for everybody else there too, even their own disciples. But he made it really clear. He didn't back off. He got to the point of saying, yeah, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood. I mean, it just kept going. It's like, dial down some more. You know, he just keeps going a little further. Like, really? Can you lay off? No. You have to understand this. You have to understand that I am the bread of life. I am the living water, just like he talked about in John 4. I am the bread of life. I am living water. And so, I say that because I used to kind of study this, and I would always like, oh, those stupid people didn't understand about the bread. You know, they when are they going to get that? It's Jesus. But I felt a lot different when I read it this time. I felt tremendously like seeing my heart in ways. You understand, it's really different when you say, I want to submit to you because you can give me the things that I need, right? And I want to submit to you because I submit myself to who you are. It seems close, but it's not at all. Because what we have to understand is that it's so easy to have your relationship with God because, man, things turn out better with Jesus. My marriage turns out better. I pray for my jobs, I pray for my raises, I pray that I can have a house, and they're all good gifts from God. I mean, just like this bread that fed them was gifts from God, right? But what is taking us to is saying, no, we don't worship God for what he gives us. In fact, that is not true spiritual food. That's just using God to get the natural things that we need. Do you know how many times I find myself saying things like, how are you doing? And I list every physical, temporal thing that's in line. So pretty good. You know, I'm not sick. I have a house. I got enough money. Got good food. You know, all the things that are temporal, I kind of just list them off. And what Jesus is saying is that every good and perfect gift comes from God. He cares about our physical, but his concern is that we are starving spiritually, and we think that if we get a little bit more of the physical needs met, the desires we have, it'll take that hunger pain away. And they won't. You guys ever had this time where you go, I can't figure out what's wrong. I got everything physically is naturally is in line, and I'm doing terrible. It's a spiritual issue, right? We know kind of what it means to have hunger pains naturally, right? But I find it's often we're a little bit like these people in the story that we're kind of blinded to our spiritual emptiness. At least I am. I don't know if you are. We're blinded to this spot in which that we have hunger that can only be filled spiritually. How do you know if you have hunger pains spiritually? Right? What I've learned is when I feel my heart hardening, I'm beginning to have hunger pains. And it's really hard to concentrate because my heart's hardening. When I feel condemnation increasing over me and it just wiping me out, when I feel fear gripping me or hopelessness coming in and pushing away my hope and stress pushing away my joy, these are not remedied by physical bread or natural provision. They're only remedied by spiritual bread, that food. And the food is not what Jesus will do for us. The food is actually Jesus. And what it means, and what he says here, is that the answer he gave to what must we do, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. And that's not a one-time thing. It's that what he's after is for you to trust him, the person of Jesus, to deeper and deeper levels, no matter what you're going through. Whether you're sick, healthy, or well, you're saying, this is my focus, this is my hunger, and I know that it comes from greater degrees of trust and giving myself all over to this relationship and this person of Jesus. And in that person, I find that he actually is the bread of life. And he fills the spots in me that no human thing can fill. And I just find it's really hard in America, at least in my world, that it's so easy to be blinded to any spiritual hunger. Because it can be so deadened by all the things that we have, all the riches that we have, all the stuff we do, but it doesn't bring satisfaction, right? And so I just want to encourage you in this kind of invitation is just this week, just start letting God into this understanding that you're a spiritual being and your greatest need is spiritual. And God cares about all your physical needs as well. That's not, you know, he's going to seek first the kingdom of God, he'll add the others, right? But we have to get the order correctly that he cares about your spiritual well-being and you need to be feeding on him. And so ask God to show you where you are empty spiritually, you know, and just come to Jesus with those things. And secondly, just go through your day from the place of how you help other people. I love it that when Jesus walked into this group of people, they just had compassion on these people because he saw that person physically and spiritually. And I think what we have to do is I hope we have eyes to see the physical needs that people have, very important, but oftentimes we don't understand we're experiencing the hunger pains of people, the emptiness of people when they're grumpy and hurting, and we keep thinking, well, come on, you got a good job, what's your problem? You know, do you want some more money? Can we take you lunch? That's not what they need. They need spiritual food, but I think God wants to use you to see below what's there and understand, God, help this spiritual being know who you are, Jesus, all right? So why don't you stand?